Earlier this month, when I introduced our Advent series, what we'd be thinking about and reflecting on during this time of December when we anticipate the birth of Jesus, I said this. In our Advent services, we're going to be focusing on what was behind the real story, something we refer to as the incarnation, the amazing reality of God becoming human and what this means. And we're going to be looking at this from a number of different angles and reminding ourselves of the wonderful things that God has done, that Jesus has made possible. And over the last few weeks, that's what we've done as we thought about the Father sending his Son, the Son becoming human, and why this was necessary, why it, in God's plan, it had to happen. And if snow hadn't got in the way, we would have looked at something of the cost of the incarnation. As it is, David managed to squeeze that in to what he was doing, thinking about why it was necessary, and that was helpful. To help us in our reflections, we had a number of resources available to us. They included the New Testament writings, what we have in the Bible, in the second half of the Bible, that tells us about the story. And these books were written, they were mature reflections of those early Christians as they thought about and tried to make sense of who Jesus was and what he had come to do. They were trying to wrestle with the idea of, well, we know something about who God was as he revealed himself to us in our history, but this Jesus, this God among us, changes everything. And we need to change our understanding of who God is. We need to change our understanding of who we are. We need to change our understanding of who the world is as we look at it all through the lens and through the vision of Jesus. We looked at something of what the New Testament has to say about this. But to help us in our thinking about the identity of Jesus, we referred to the deliberations of a group of bishops who met in AD 451. And they came up with something that was hugely helpful about the nature of who Jesus was. We thought about, last week, we thought about some words from John Calvin, a very influential French theologian in the 1500s. And all this is because for over 2,000 years, people have been trying to come to terms with who this baby was. They thought this was an important event and we need to try and understand what it means, why he came, what he achieved, what he continues to offer. And the inspired writings in the Bible, the reflections of many people since then, can all help us to a deeper understanding and awareness of Jesus. And as we've reflected on these things, we've been challenged to respond to who Jesus is and what God offers through him. But at that first Christmas, it wasn't called Christmas then, but you know what I mean, that moment of the birth and those early days of the life of Jesus, in those early years, none of that was available to the people living at the time. None of that stuff was written. None of that reflection had taken place. That all came later. But what they did have was the amazing opportunity and privilege to actually go and see this baby, this young boy, and respond to him directly. And this morning, we're going to be thinking about how four groups of people responded to the news of his birth, responded to the baby, and challenge ourselves as we look at their story as to how we are responding today. And to help us in that, we're going to listen to four short extracts from the story. I'm not going to read complete passages, but small snippets that give us an insight into how people responded. We'll see four different responses: from shepherds, from an old man called Simeon, from wise men, and from a king called Herod. Ruth is going to come and read those to us.
The first reading about the shepherds comes from Luke chapter 2, verses 16 to 20. So they hurried off and found Mary and Joseph and the baby who was lying in the manger. When they had seen him, they spread the word concerning what had been told them about this child, and all who heard it were amazed at what the shepherds said to them. But Mary treasured up all these things and pondered them in her heart. The shepherds returned, glorifying and praising God for all the things they had heard and seen, which were just as they had been told. And then moving in the same chapter to verse 27. Moved by the Spirit, he went into the temple courts. When the parents brought in the child Jesus to do for him what the custom of the law required, Simeon took him in his arms and praised God, saying, "Sovereign Lord, as you have promised, you may now dismiss your servant in peace. For my eyes have seen your salvation, which you have prepared in the sight of all nations, a light for revelation to the Gentiles and the glory of your people Israel." And then move into the kings in Matthew chapter 2, verse 11. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And then finally, Matthew chapter 2, verse 16. When Herod realized that he had been outwitted by the Magi, he was furious, and he gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem and its vicinity who were 2 years old and under, in accordance with the time he had learned from the Magi.
Thank you, Ruth. The shepherds. You've seen that picture before. The shepherds had heard the news of the birth. Angels came and said, "A boy has been born. He's bringing peace. He's bringing goodwill. He's a saviour. You need to go and see." They got excited about this news and they went to see what was happening for themselves. And they came and they went into the place where the mother and the baby and Joseph were there, and they saw. And something of what they saw, something of what they had heard, galvanized them into action. And it caused them to do two things. They went around telling everyone what they'd heard about this baby. They praised and glorified God. They told each other, they told God how great he was and what wonderful things he had done. So it affected the conversation they had with people around them, and it affected the way in which they engaged with God. Some of you will know that our first grandchild was born last year, actually on the Saturday, the 2nd of April. We did not hear the news via a great crowd of angels. We had to make do with social media, but it was still very exciting. It was something we'd been anticipating, something we'd been waiting for, something they'd been waiting for, particularly Emma, much, much more. But it had happened. She was born. This is actually the message we got on WhatsApp to tell us that this had happened. That is what Richard chose to communicate. We took that to be an indication that everything was okay and they were busy doing stuff. We had the opportunity to go down and see them on the next day, on the Sunday, to see how they were doing, to meet our granddaughter, to see this new life that had come into the world, to hold her, to welcome her. It is possible that after we came back home, we might have mentioned this to a few people as we thanked God for her safe arrival. And she continues to grow and develop, which is great to see. And we look forward to seeing all that she will be and become. However, while we think she is rather special, we wouldn't claim for her the things that were said about this baby boy in Bethlehem. He was unique. If we'd read a few verses earlier, we would have seen some amazing claims made for this baby. He was going to bring joy for everyone. into a world that is so short of real joy that makes a difference deep down in people's lives. This baby was going to bring joy. He was a saviour, the one who could reach out and rescue and draw people back from being lost into relationship with God. He's the one that for hundreds of years, God through his prophets, God through different means, have been saying, I'm going to send someone. I'm going to send someone to put things right, to restore things to how they should be. He was the one that they had been speaking about. He was Lord. He wasn't insignificant. He had a position of supreme authority and power, even though he was lying in a manger, in humility. He would bring peace. And we thought earlier about the need for peace in the world. And this is what Jesus came to bring. And so the shepherds went, having heard this catalogue of what this baby was going to be like, what this baby was going to do, and they went and they saw and they believed. And as they went back to their flocks, they spread the word. They told people what they'd seen. They told people what they had heard. They knew something and they couldn't keep that knowledge to themselves. They had to share it. And as they did, others became amazed as well. Imagine for a moment how the conversation might have gone. We've just been to visit a new baby. What, they let you in your dirty and smelly clothes? That didn't matter. What's important is that this baby isn't like any other. Why is that? Babies are born every day, and they are all pretty much the same. But angels came and told us this one was going to be different. He was going to bring peace and joy. He was going to act as our saviour. He has come from God to do God's work. Are you sure you've been to the nursery and not to the pub? It's all true. We've seen him. There's something special about him. He's going to do something amazing in the world and for everyone. You're all clearly excited. Maybe there's something in it that we need to find out for ourselves. The conversation might not have gone like that. But the important thing is the shepherds had experienced something that was changing their lives. And it was wrapped up in the person and potential of this baby boy. And they chose not to keep it for themselves, but to share the news with everyone they met. There were lots of questions they could not have answered, lots of things they did not understand. But they had met with Jesus, and that had changed them. So the first challenge we find as these people respond to the birth of Jesus is that of telling others. We know something of the story. Many of us are excited about the birth of this baby boy. Are we, like the shepherds, going to tell this story to those we meet, to those we spend time with this Christmas? Or are we going to keep it for ourselves? One of the evangelists we have in the Baptist Union has been saying that this is the one time of year where you can stand up in a pub with a group of people and sing songs about Jesus and nobody finds it strange. It's what's expected. We have an opportunity to tell a story that the world needs to hear, a story of joy and peace and hope and life and love. How are we going to respond to that? Are we going to be like the shepherds or not? The next person we come across is this gentleman called Simeon. Under the law in which they were living, 40 days after the birth of a baby son, the parents were required to take him to the priests, so in this case to the temple, and to offer sacrifices. And as observant Jews, this is what Mary and Joseph did. But something totally unexpected happened. An old man interrupted the proceedings, came up to them, took the baby off them, and started to say some amazing things. And Ruth has read some of that to us. Imagine some parents with a newborn baby, think of Richard and Emma, taking him, her, with them to the registry office for his birth to be registered, or taking him for a hospital checkup. And suddenly someone who isn't part of the system, comes along and starts proclaiming powerful and strange words over him. They might find it a bit strange. They might want to grab their child back and report him to the authorities. But in all the strangeness and amazement that had surrounded this birth and all the events that had led up to that birth, this was just one more thing. And so Mary and Joseph listened. They accepted what he was saying, and it added to their wonder about what their son was going to do, who he really was. And what Simeon was saying was that in this small bundle of humanity was the one God had sent to be the saviour of the world for everyone, with no one being outside the scope of what he had come to do. Without knowing it, Simeon was repeating the claims of the angels about the saviour being born, and he was praising God for having stayed alive long enough to see it, which is what God had promised him would happen. Simeon, he probably had no or little idea as to the details of what this boy would do or how he would fulfill his role as saviour, but he was content to leave that with God. He had seen him, and that was enough. Each of us here this morning are, in a strange way, in a similar position to Simeon. We don't need to wait for a saviour to be born. We don't need to wait for the time when God will act, because the saviour has been born. God has acted. And it happened in the birth of the boy whose birth we celebrate at Christmas. For Simeon, he was the saviour of the world. Who is he to us? Who is he to you? A nice story? A historical but irrelevant figure? Someone who's totally and completely changed your life. Who is he to you? Who would you want him to be to you? And the next people we read about appearing on the scene are these wise men from the East. For the shepherds, as far as we can make out, it was a sort of a one-night interruption. Angels came, they told a story. Shepherds left their sheep, went to find the baby, told a few people, went back to their sheep. It would have taken a few hours. It wasn't just a chance meeting in the temple. Maybe not a chance meeting, but it wasn't just a short meeting in the temple as it was for Simeon. For them, it was a well thought out and carefully planned expedition, even if they didn't know where their final destination was going to be. They were astrologers who studied the stars. They probably were based around Babylon, modern-day Babylon. They'd seen a star which they believed heralded the birth of a new king and wanted to come and see for themselves. It would have been a long journey, maybe around 900 miles on the back of a camel. It would have taken a long time. They'd have had to make arrangements. They'd have had to put their expedition together. They'd have had to choose gifts to take with them. They'd have had to travel. Probably would have taken months from the time they had seen the star to the time they arrived at their destination. They believed this was a royal birth, and so they assumed that he would have been born into the family of the king. And so it's reasonable they went to Herod's palace, who was the king at the time, to find him. But they found that that wasn't the case, and they got some guidance from Herod. He consulted some experts, and they said, actually, you need to go to Bethlehem. And they set off again, and as they carried on their journey, they were overjoyed that the star that had started them on this journey had appeared again and guided them to their final destination, the place where the child and the family were living. They went in. They saw the child and his mother, they worshipped him, they gave him valuable gifts, and then they went back home. It's generally assumed that the practice of giving gifts to people at Christmas stems from these wise men giving gifts to Jesus. It's a great thing to do. We will celebrate doing that in our short service tomorrow morning. But it's easy to miss the significance of what the wise men did and get caught up in ourselves and our loved ones as we celebrate Christmas together. these wise men recognized the royalty, the significance of this baby, and they worshipped him. These wise men offered valuable gifts to him as a recognition of who he was. This Christmas, how are we going to respond to this Jesus? Are we going to worship him? Are we going to offer ourselves and our abilities to him? Or are we going to ignore him and miss the point of it all? Which takes us on to the villain of the piece. So far, it's all been positive. But for Herod, the news of this birth was the cause of distress and concern. He was upset. And this is simply because he saw his position as king being threatened with news of another king, a king of the Jews, being born. He knew that his claim to the throne wasn't secure. It certainly wasn't popular. He wasn't actually from the country. He was from a neighbouring area to the south. He'd been appointed by the occupying forces, the Romans. To hear that someone who had been born, who might legitimately be seen as the rightful heir to Israel's great king David, was enough to give Herod sleepless nights. He had no thoughts of welcoming him, or even really going to see him, but just wanted to get rid of him. And of all the people that we're thinking about today, he's the only one who did not have a face-to-face meeting with Jesus. He missed that opportunity. He missed that opportunity to go and visit and to see this person who had come to change the world. And that's important. That if we want to grasp this, we need to have a face-to-face, a real meeting with Jesus. Herod didn't do that. His concern was not about what God might be doing or finding out more about who this baby was, but in ensuring that his authority remained unchallenged and that he would be able to continue his reign as king. His thoughts were probably with his successor, as the history books tell us that he was about 70 years old at the time, and he was suffering from some incurable diseases, and he actually died within a year or so of the birth of Jesus. So he wouldn't have been around anyway for this baby to displace. But maybe he was concerned about his legacy. But his response, his concern about authority and power, raised some questions for us. Each of the people we've looked at who met with Jesus realised he was someone special. We've seen people recognising that he was someone to thank God for, someone to be worshipped, someone to be acknowledged as king. And this raises the question of authority and who's going to have authority over our own lives. As we meet with Jesus, as we really recognise who he is, then the question this raises is, are we going to recognise his authority over our lives? Herod was not prepared to. How about us? Are we prepared to not just to see Jesus as a baby born into humble circumstances, as he was, but to see him as the king that wise men recognised as he is, and to acknowledge his authority over our lives? So, four groups of people. Two groups, two individuals, responded to Jesus, to God taking on humanity and coming amongst us. And their stories raise questions about how we respond to him today. Are we going to keep it to ourselves, or like the shepherds, tell others? Are we, like Simeon, going to recognise that he is the saviour of the world, of each individual who responds to him? Are we, like the wise men, going to offer gifts? Are we going to offer ourselves to him? Unlike Herod, are we going to recognise his authority over our lives? How, this Christmas, are we going to respond? How this Christmas are you going to respond? I'll leave you to think about those questions for a moment, as we take a few moments of quiet, these questions are going to, these things are going to stay on the screen, and I encourage you to think for a few moments as to how you're going to respond to those questions as we think about the birth of Jesus.